Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Wellness Ultimatum Radio Show. I am your host, Omar Cumberbatch. Today we have a Halloween special, and this is really like a scary and shocking subject that I'm so excited to have Dr. Tom O'Brien talk to us about. Dr. Tom O'Brien is an internationally recognized speaker and workshop leader who specializes in the complications of non-celiac gluten sensitivity and celiac disease as they occur inside and outside of the intestines. He is the founder of www.thedoctor.com, and he's also the author of his new book, The Autoimmune Fix, How to Stop the Hidden Autoimmune Damage That Keeps You Sick, Fat, and Tired Before It Turns into Disease. Dr. O'Brien, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Thank you so much. Very well, thank you. Very well.
Great to hear. I mentioned in the intro, I'm so happy to have you on Halloween because I think this topic is so shocking and scary. Because it's
well, that's
really
a good
amazing.
Point. Yes, it is. I was wondering how you're going to tie that together in a positive way, and now I see. So thank you.
Oh man, but your book is fantastic, and I mean, I had a little bit of a health scare in respect to this gluten topic. It was something that
yes.
I thought I was completely fine, and I had one of my guests, introduce me to one of the blood panels that look out for this, and I had inflammation markers off the chart. So I could definitely testify to the reality of this. And thank you for what you do. But I just definitely want to get into, your story and how you became such an expert in this particular field.
Oh, thank you. Well, the first thing I think for your listeners would be to understand this basic premise in why we get sick. The basic premise is that every disease, as far as I know, every single disease is a disease of inflammation. At the cellular level, it's always inflammation. The cell's on fire. So the question is it a brain cell or a kidney cell? Is it gasoline or kerosene? So if we take a step back and not just get stuck on, oh, I've got high blood pressure, I have to take high blood pressure pills, or, oh, I've got migraines, I have to take migraine pills. And it's really important to do those things to help relieve the symptoms that we're suffering from. But the bigger picture, the way you get better health, larger amounts of foundational health, is by stepping back and looking at what are the mechanisms that are causing the particular condition that I have. Mrs. Mm-hmm. Patient, if you pull at a chain, the chain always breaks at the weakest link. It's at one end, the middle, the other end. It's your heart, your brain, your liver, your kidneys, wherever your genetic weak link is, that's where the chain's going to break if you pull too hard. And the pull on the chain is inflammation. So anything that triggers inflammation is pulling on the chain of your body. And it might be your brain and you get dementia when you're in your 60s or 70s, or it might be your blood vessels and you get high blood pressure, or it might be your liver and you get high cholesterol. Or it might be your blood sugar regulating system and you get diabetes. But the mechanism, the step back and take a look and get a big picture mechanism, is always inflammation. So when we start thinking that way and we start asking the questions, what's causing the inflammation in my body, then you start getting deeper answers and you get more bang for the buck of the attention that you're putting on your health.
Absolutely. And one of the interesting things reading your book is that you actually were a baker in an organic restaurant.
That's right. That's right.
Which is just ironic. But another part of that,
yes,
though, I found real amusing was like you thought you were eating healthy, too. So tell us a little bit about that and that backdrop and just how you kind of stumbled upon.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. In my early 20s, I was at the University of Michigan and I was working as a baker. I worked my way through school, and it was a health food restaurant. And I had long hair and all that back then. And we baked the very best bread. I would hand make hand roll 48 loaves a day of this unleavened bread, so no added yeast to it, whole wheat bread, but it would rise over the course of 24 hours. It would rise. You know, there's a way of doing it that the natural yeast in the flour will let it rise. And this was a destination bread, meaning people would drive to us to buy the bread, that it was so good. And, you know, we sold out every day. And so I'd pull this bread out of the oven and I'd cut off an end piece, about a half inch to three quarter inch, nice thick slice of hot whole wheat bread, still smoking, you know, coming out of the oven. Mm-hmm. I'd put some butter on it sometimes and just eat a piece of that. But many times I would want to be healthier, so I'd smother it with peanut butter. That's the protein. Mm. And then I'd pour honey on it. I wouldn't just take a knife and put a little honey on it. I'd pour honey on it and put sliced bananas on it. After all, fruit's healthy for you. So I had this this blood sugar time bomb that I was eating because the bread itself, but then with the honey, with the bananas, is such a high concentration of sugar. There's a measurement of food called the glycemic index. Mm-hmm. That measurement is basically how much sugar your body thinks is in the food you're eating. What's the glycemic index of the food? And how much sugar is in it? And you want to have foods that have a glycemic index below 70. That's ideally really in the 50s to low 60s is great, but certainly below 70. Well, the glycemic index of whole wheat bread is higher than a Snickers bar. That when you eat a Snickers bar, the amount of sugar that your body thinks it's getting is nowhere near the amount of sugar your body thinks it's getting when you eat a slice of whole wheat bread. As crazy as it sounds, that's the science. That when you eat whole wheat bread, which is better for you than white, but when you eat whole wheat bread, your body thinks that you're getting more sugar than eating a candy bar. Now, that doesn't mean you go out and start eating candy bars thinking they're healthy for you. You know, give me a break. You know, don't do that. But we also have been misled into thinking it's okay to eat bread. And this is one reason why it's not great, because your body thinks you're getting so much sugar. And when you get a whole lot of sugar and you can't use it all because you're not exercising enough to burn off that sugar, so your body stores it, and it stores it as fat. And if you look at the major recognized problem in our world today is that people are just packing a whole lot of extra weight, and it's causing blood sugar problems, and diabetes is the big scourge. And the cost to Medicare and Medicaid, just Medicare and Medicaid, in the next 30 years, by 2044, if the incidence of diabetes continues just the way it's going, not gets worse faster, but just continues to rise at the same rate it is, the cost to Medicare and Medicaid alone to treat diabetes is going to be more than all the taxes collected in the United States. We aren't going to have any money to pay Medicare to take care of all the diabetics that are developing. I know it's like, what? What?
Yeah.
I mean, but that's the facts. That's what's happening right now. So we have to wake up. We have to wake up to the food that we're eating and stop eating food because it feels good when we eat it, and we're eating for comfort, and we have to eat to fuel our bodies. You have to start thinking of your body as a machine. And if you buy an expensive car like a Corvette Stingray, you know, or a Mercedes or whatever you buy, you don't put cheap oil in it. You know, you spend a lot of money for a car. You save your money for years to get a really nice car. You don't put cheap oil or the cheapest gas in it. You know, if you buy a Volkswagen or an everyday kind of car, you can get the economy gas and the car will run just fine. But when you buy a high-performance car, you can't put the economy gas in it because the engine won't run very well. Eventually, it'll burn up. And that's what's happening in our bodies, is that we're putting the wrong fuel in our bodies. We have to wake up to this.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you point out we are all high performance machines. So it's like we need to get the best things in our body. And one of the things that I definitely like about the book is that you do focus on the gluten issue. And I know that I've heard many times, just even in, you know, since I've kind of converted and stopped eating gluten myself, like they're making fun of me. You know, they're saying it's a joke, it's a fad diet. Why do you think that is the case? Is it because that autoimmunity takes so long for it to progress, or just the research isn't out into the public like it should be?
Well, you know, the public doesn't read research, and the public, how do I say this? We go, unfortunately, we're a society that there are so many, listen, here's one for you. I was flying home yesterday. I was teaching in Austin over the weekend, flying home, and on the plane I was reading the newspaper, and there was an article that said that the World Wildlife Federation and two universities together, the three of them, just published a study that showed that there is a 57% reduction across the board in wildlife populations on the planet since 1970.
Wow.
57% less elephants, less walruses, less rainbow trout, less everything, birds. 57, we've killed off more than half of all of the numbers of every species on the planet. The average is 57%. And the numbers are higher around fresh water. So animals that live around fresh water, inland, you know, because they're drinking the water, because we've been spraying so many toxic chemicals on the land and on our crops. And if you were drinking water that comes out of the stream, like the animals have to drink water that comes out of the stream, you'd die early also. And that's what's happening to us. We're killing off the planet, and we need to wake up, you know, as a society. We just, you know, I just read this 2 days ago on the airplane, and I thought, my God, and as I read the article, I thought, oh, that's too bad. And then I went on to read another article, but then driving home from the airport, I almost stopped on the freeway. I said, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
We've killed off over half of all the animals on the planet in 40 years. Wait a minute. Is that correct? Is that correct? Mm. And that's correct. That's correct. And so my wife and I went to the movies last night, and we saw Inferno, the new Tom Hanks movie. And there's a crazy guy in the movie, you know, the villain. And he actually quoted that statistic. You know, 57% of all the animal species on the planet are gone. And he's using that as part of the rationale for the crazy actions he does. I'm not going to give the movie away, but he uses that as a rationale, and we think the guy's crazy, and he was crazy with the actions that he was trying to take. But he was absolutely correct in trying to scream alarm, 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 because your grandkids, everyone, your grandkids, my newly born granddaughter, is inheriting a world that doesn't support life anymore. And I'm really not a crazy guy. I'm not a crazy fanatic. But you read the studies, and you either bury your head in the sand and you're blinded to it, or you go, oh my God, what do we do about this? Holy cow, this is terrible. What's going on here? So what we're trying to do in the autoimmune fix is to wake people up just to what's happening in your body. That if you understand the mechanisms of why you eventually get sick, because here's the bottom line. You can identify the mechanisms that are going on that will cause disease in you years before you get Alzheimer's, or years before you get a heart attack, or years before you get multiple sclerosis, or years before you get rheumatoid arthritis, or years before your kidneys start to shut down. Years beforehand, if you know how to ask the right questions. And what the book is about is asking the right questions, learning how to ask the right questions of your doctors and also of yourself. You know, you ask the question, what kind of a lifestyle choice am I making about the food that I eat? Should I really be eating dot, dot, dot?
Right.
Whatever that is, whatever that is. So that's the purpose of the book.
Yes, no, absolutely. And gluten specifically, why is that such a damaging protein that we really, really should avoid?
Yeah. excuse me. Just one moment.
Yeah, no problem.
Oh, I just took a sip of a tea that my wife made that had a whole lot of cayenne in the bottom of the glass, and it just woke me up. Okay.
Oh, man, I think that the word gluten was getting you sick. You couldn't even
get
stomach
right.
start going with it.
Oh, that's great. So here's the thing about wheat. And it's not just the gluten in wheat. It's for some people, it's the gluten proteins in wheat. For some people, it's the agglutinins in wheat. They're called the lectin family. For some people, it's the gluteomorphins. Those are the compounds in wheat that affect your brain function. There are different components in wheat. We've talked a lot about gluten as a society. It's the buzzword, and it's really important, but there are a number of different components in wheat that are a problem. Mrs. Patient, if you think of proteins like a pearl necklace, hydrochloric acid that's made in your stomach undoes the clasp of the pearl necklace. Now you're holding a string of pearls.
Mm-hmm.
Our enzymes are supposed to act like scissors to cut off each pearl of the pearl necklace one at a time. First, it cuts it into clumps, and then smaller clumps of the pearl necklace and smaller clumps of the pearl necklace and smaller clumps until you're down to each individual pearl. Those are called amino acids. And the inside of your intestines are lined with cheesecloth. So only really small molecules can get through the cheesecloth to get into the bloodstream. That's the way we absorb our vitamins and our minerals and proteins and stuff, is by our enzymes acting like scissors. The problem with wheat is that no human has the ability to break down the pearl necklace in all the way down to individual pearls. No one does. Harvard's published on this. Many different authors have published on this. The best we can do is cut the pearl necklace into clumps of pearls. There's a 33-pearl clump, a 17-pearl clump, a 9-pearl clump, 11-pearl clumps. These clumps are called peptides, and that's as small as they can get.
Mm-hmm.
And the result is you've got these clumps of pearls that cause inflammation inside the intestines. And the inflammation inside your gut is what causes the tears in the cheesecloth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and we have an entire new body every 7 years. Some cells regenerate very quickly. Some cells are very slow. The fastest cells are the inside lining of your gut. Every 3 to 7 days, you have a whole new lining to your gut, like the skin of a snake.
Mm-hmm.
When you eat wheat and your body can't break it down to each pearl of the pearl necklace, no one can, those clumps of the pearl necklace called peptides are inflammatory. They cause inflammation in the gut.
Mm-hmm.
Now, usually a little bit of inflammation from wheat is not a big deal. And the immune system will say, that's not a big deal. Leave it alone. Let it go. There's a monitoring system in the gut where your immune system, trying to protect you, is screening everything to make sure nothing gets past the cheesecloth that's not supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is that we're exposed to so many toxins all day, every day. Every child born in America today has an average of 186 different chemicals in their bloodstream that aren't supposed to be there. Every single child born in America that's been checked, 186 different chemicals in their bloodstream. So all of these chemicals are really toxic, and your immune system's fighting all these chemicals. So your immune system, it becomes hypervigilant. It's having to fight so many different things that it really wasn't designed to fight. We have the same immune system as our ancestors 5,000 years ago. And the only thing that our ancestors thousands of years ago were supposed to fight in terms of the foods that we eat are bacteria, bugs, viruses, molds, and fungus. That's it. That's all that our immune system is designed to handle. Bacteria, bugs, viruses, mold, and fungus. That's it. But now we've got bisphenol A, the chemical that softens plastic, DDT, PCBs, all of the thousands and thousands of chemicals that we're exposed to every single day. The chemicals in my shirt when it comes back from a dry cleaner, if I'm wearing a dress shirt or from my tie. The flame retardant in your baby's clothing that she wears at night. The flame retardant that they're breathing a little bit of that. The flame retardant that's in the bedding that we use. All of these toxic chemicals we're exposed to all day, every day, that your immune system becomes hypervigilant. It's working really hard overtime. And when it's working hard overtime, now the minor irritants like wheat, there's no threshold to let the little annoyances pass by. So your immune system starts fighting wheat also. And once it starts fighting wheat, it's permanent. It's permanent. And the danger with fighting wheat and causing the inflammation is that it does is something called molecular mimicry. Now, I know I'm talking a lot here, but hang with me, folks, because this is really important. That when your immune system fights wheat, let's say it's fighting the protein structure and it's 33 pearls long, 33 amino acids long. And I'm just going to call it AABCD. There's 33 letters, but I'm just going to call it AABCD. Now, you've got antibodies going through your bloodstream looking for AABCD. And the antibodies are going everywhere. And remember, there's no lanes of traffic in your bloodstream. It's just a highway, and everything's going all in the same direction. So the antibodies are bouncing around in there, heading in the same direction, looking for AABCD and firing these chemical bullets anywhere where they see AABCD in front of them. As your antibodies are going through the bloodstream, let's say the blood is going past the thyroid, where the thyroid faces the bloodstream, that inside lining of the thyroid facing the bloodstream is made up of proteins and fats. Proteins are amino acids, hundreds of amino acids long. And that's the proteins of the thyroid facing the bloodstream. Now what's going through the bloodstream, passing by, like traffic on a highway passing by, is these antibodies looking for AABCD. Well, the proteins on the surface of the thyroid that are hundreds of amino acids long includes AABCD as part of their 100 amino acid sequence. So now the antibodies that are looking for AABCD in the bloodstream see it over there hanging against the wall of the thyroid. Look over there, and it fires this chemical bullet at the thyroid. Now you get a damaged thyroid cell. And your another part of your immune system is always getting rid of damaged cells to make room for new cells and new growth to occur. We have a whole new body every 7 years. You have to get rid of the old cells to make new cells. And so your body makes antibodies to get rid of the old cells. But now the antibodies to AABCD have just damaged the thyroid. So now you have to make antibodies to your thyroid to get rid of the damaged thyroid cells. That's not a problem. Except you have toast for breakfast. You make antibodies to AABCD. You have a sandwich for lunch. You make antibodies to AABCD. You have pasta for dinner. You make antibodies to AABCD. You have croutons on your salad. You make antibodies to AABCD. Day after day after week after month after year, and continually shooting at the thyroid also, if that's the weak link in your chain, until eventually you have an autoimmune thyroid disease. You've killed off so many tissue, so much thyroid tissue, now that thyroid can't work very well anymore, and you have an autoimmune thyroid disease. That's the mechanism. That's a primary mechanism that causes Alzheimer's, that causes thyroid disease, that causes liver disease, that causes heart disease. It's called molecular mimicry with the toxic chemicals that are coming into your bloodstream. And wheat is the most common food that triggers this type of response.
And is it that wheat is the one that really gets through the barrier? Because you do speak about dairy and sugars as well. Like, is wheat the specific one that gets through and causes this problem? Or does dairy and
it
sugar
is.
Do
it,
it as
is.
Well?
Dairy can do it. There's never been a study that I've seen that shows everyone has a problem with dairy. I've seen studies that say 50% of people do, you know, half of them do make elevated antibodies to dairy. And the thing about dairy, if you make antibodies to dairy, the molecular mimicry with dairy, the AABCD of dairy, is with myelin, that is the saran wrap around your nerves. And so you get brain disease from dairy sensitivities. You get this molecular mimicry possibly happening to you from your sensitivity to dairy. Wheat is the most common food that produces these antibodies. In our office, we found clinically 67% of everyone that came into our office complaining of something, you know, that's why you go see a doctor, 67% of those people, when you test them thoroughly, they have a problem with wheat. And just under 50% of them had a problem with dairy. But 67% of them were making elevated antibodies to one of the peptides of wheat.
Gotcha. And as far as the sugar component, I know, again, you talk about sugar and its inflammation properties as well. Does that have the same effect as far as getting the autoimmune response as well?
Not as much. Sugar will weaken the immune system so that it doesn't have as much tolerance and cause it to overreact. It will do that. The big thing about sugar is that it packs on the weight, it throws your cholesterol off, throws your triglycerides off, causes your brain to kind of be a roller coaster in terms of its function. There are so many problems with sugar that when you do wheat-free, dairy-free, sugar-free for 3 weeks, people feel like $1 million. They feel great. They really feel great. Then go out and have a pizza and see how you feel. And the next day, you know, patients consistently come back and say, oh, I feel as I'm as sick as a dog. And I'd say, oh, congratulations, I'm happy for you. And they look at me, I say, now you know. This is what's going on all the time in your body. Now you know. So it's up to you, you know, with what you want to do about it. But this is the mechanism that causes the inflammation. This is the gasoline on the fire, if you will, causing the inflammation that causes the disease.
And if you can, explain to us, you know, why the symptoms are not the first manifestation of the problem. And it's like, I read that part, and it's like, you know, sort of to me registered like when you get a divorce, it doesn't mean that the relationship, it means the relationship was bad for a while. It's how is that comparable?
Well, that's really interesting because I would think for the vast majority of people, when they first got married, they were just so sweetly in love and enamored with each other that life could not have been better, right? Things happen down the road somehow, and all of a sudden it gets to an end point where you're getting a divorce. Well, your body's the same way. There was a doctor named Melissa Arbuckle, and she's an MD, PhD, and she went to the VA, and she looked for people with lupus. Lupus is an autoimmune disease. And she found 132 people with lupus, diagnosed with lupus, in this one VA center. Now, if you're in the VA center, you're a veteran. If you're a veteran, you were in the armed forces. If you were in the armed forces, you had your blood drawn many times over the years while you were in the armed forces. What people don't know is that since 1978, the government's been saving and freezing all of that blood. They've got tens of millions of samples of our service people's blood. So Dr. Arbuckle went back to the VA and asked for permission to look at the frozen blood of the currently diagnosed patients with lupus from when they were healthy in the Air Force or in the Navy. And she got permission, and what did she find? She found that every single lupus patient, every one of them, had elevated antibodies that caused lupus. There are 7 antibodies that cause lupus. Every single one of them had all 7 of them elevated years before there was ever a problem with symptoms, years before they ever had a symptom. And that makes sense because when you've got elevated levels of antibodies, you're killing off your cells. And, you know, I'm going to make up a number. You've got 10 billion brain cells. And if you kill off 500 a day, you can't tell. You've got 10 billion. And if you kill off 500 a day in a year, that's, oh, I don't know, 150,000. You can't tell because you've got 10 billion. But over 5 years, that's 750,000. Now you're not quite functioning. Now you're saying, oh, I'm getting older. I don't remember the way I used to. Ha ha. Oh, really? How old are you? Well, I'm 38. No, that's not supposed to happen. That's not supposed to happen. So there are many years. It's called the prodromal period. There are years when you have elevated antibodies killing off tissue, but you haven't killed off enough tissue yet to where you've got symptoms. Mm-hmm. So that prodromal period, that's the period when you really can do something about this. You can stop this thing. You can find out where the weak link is in your chain, and you can nip it in the bud before before you kill off so much tissue, you get diagnosed with Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or rheumatoid arthritis or psoriasis or multiple sclerosis or lupus, whatever the disease is. It comes on over time, and we now have the technology easily available so that you can identify this years and years ahead of time. That's why I've been traveling the world for the last year interviewing the world experts. I've done 85 interviews in Leipzig, Germany, in Barcelona, Spain, in Lisbon, Portugal, in London, England, in Dublin, Ireland, in Sao Paulo, Brazil. I've interviewed experts from all over the world on this topic of autoimmunity. And we've put this whole thing together. We've put it all together to tell a story. And the story is online. It starts on November 14th, and it's free. And everyone can go listen to it and watch it. It's going to be 1 hour a day for 7 days. It's called Betrayal, the Autoimmune Disease Solution They're Not Telling You. So when you hear the world experts talking about this, and you know that you're listening to the best in the world when they're introduced, and you hear them talking to you about what it means by the foods that you eat, if you have a problem with that food, what it's doing, and what autoimmunity is, and how do you stop it in its tracks, how do you arrest the development of this, it empowers people to say, you know what, I can do that. I can start there and make a change in my life. So that's called it's called Betrayal, and it's betrayalseries.com. BetrayalSeries.com. It's all free. People can register there and watch the whole event. And my book, The Autoimmune Fix, is on this concept. It's on this whole concept of you can identify it early, the number one mechanism for getting sick in our world today. You can identify it early, and you can nip it in the bud. It's not hard to do. You just need to ask the right questions to do this.
No, absolutely. And I think I'm glad that you brought it up as far as the age thing. And you really do believe that, you know, getting older is not an excuse for declining health, correct?
Oh, my goodness. One of our guests that I interviewed for the Gluten Summit is Professor Michael Marsh. Professor Marsh is the godfather of diagnosing celiac disease. He's done more for diagnosing that particular autoimmune disease than anybody else. And he retired a while ago. He was at Oxford in England. And when he retired, he went back and he got two PhDs. So he went back to school for 10 years after retiring at the age of 72. Oh. And he's an example that your brain can work really, really well if you just take care of it, you know, if you learn how to take care of it properly. Yeah, so it's certainly possible to have your brain work well for you into your senior years. It doesn't have to wear out on you the way it does for most of us.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's definitely refreshing, and I'm definitely, hope that the audience gets that point, that especially when you start thinking that, common things at the age, like you said, 38, you're forgetting things. That's not really it's what's supposed to be happening. It's a telltale sign that you should start looking into your health, for sure.
That's right. That's right. It's those telltale signs. You know, there's two ways to measure the temperature in the engine of a car. In some cars, a hot light comes on the dashboard. Too late. Pull over. If you keep driving, your engine's burnt out. That's the same as getting symptoms. The other way is some cars have a temperature gauge, and you see it slowly starting to climb before it gets in the red zone, and you can say, "This engine's starting to get hotter. It's not overheating yet, but what's it doing so close to the red zone? I better check that out." That's what you want to do with your health. You don't want to wait until your hot light comes on the dashboard and you got to pull over, meaning you've got severe symptoms or you've had one heart attack or you're diagnosed with a tumor, or you don't want to wait until you're in the red zone. And now it's easier than ever to identify, are you overheating? Are you heading into that red zone? Is your immune system overactive, attacking your own tissue? That's what you look for, is do I have an autoimmune mechanism going on now? And when you check that out and you address that, you feel better than you felt in years. Years. And it doesn't take long. As my book outlines, 3 weeks. Just in 3 weeks, you notice you're feeling better. And it takes longer than that to heal the problems, of course. Of course. But you notice within 3 weeks that you're feeling much better.
So do you feel that it's necessary to get tested for these things first, since most people don't see the need to change otherwise if they're not really paying attention to their symptoms?
That's really a good question. And in my practice, I think testing is critically important because you've got to see it on paper. You've got to see it black and white, because if we're asking you to change your lifestyle, to change your selection of foods, what are the basic foods? Most people eat 11 different foods. That's it. That's what they eat. Out of the thousands of different options that are out there on the planet, we eat the same 11 foods most of the time. Most people are like that. And someone may feel really proud they're at 18 foods, that they, in a week, that they'll alter. But when they have vegetables, they always have the same corn and peas mixed together or something. Well, that's my vegetable. Well, vegetables that kids really like. And when people eat those as adults and that's all they eat for vegetables, the same ones the kids, you know why the kids like corn and peas? Because they have the highest sugar content of almost any vegetable.
Absolutely.
Right? So,
yep.
It's not that they're bad for you, it's just excessive amounts of them are bad for you. But what we tell people, the rule of thumb is 5 different vegetables a day, 5 different colors a day of vegetables. For adults, about a pound a day, 5 different colors, because every color is a different family of antioxidants and phytonutrients and vitamins and minerals. So your target is 5 different colors: purple cabbage, red tomatoes, green broccoli, orange peppers, blue berries. Just target 5 different colors a day. That's an easy way to get more vegetable variety in.
Yeah, that's definitely a useful tip. And a lot of us, I know you're absolutely right, we just get stuck in that routine of what we're used to and never kind of break that. So I'm that's a great one, 11. I got to count mine up after the end of the show, because I'm sure I'm a little bit better than that, but not by much.
Yes, right. That kind of a realization. Oh, wow, I guess I do only eat 14 different vegetables and I keep eating the same things. If our ancestors ate whatever they could find, right? If there was carrots that were harvesting, there were carrots. 150 years ago, there were no refrigerators. And so you eat what's harvested at that time of year or what you could store, right? And the ideal way for us to eat is to have a lot of variety, variety in your vegetables, because you get different families of vitamins and minerals and phytonutrients and antioxidants in the different vegetables that you choose.
Yeah, absolutely. And just getting back to the gluten point, and I know I'm going to butcher the saying of this, but what is it called that the rug? You said it's a shaggy rug. What are those things called? What is that again?
Microvilli.
I thought. It flattens, gluten actually flattens it out and makes absorption very difficult, also creating that barrier where you can get particles through the wall. Like I read somewhere, and your book did touch on it a little bit, that once you get that back in shape, like you can possibly get better as far as your dealings with, say, dairy and other things that you might have a little bit of sensitivity to. Is that accurate?
It is accurate for some foods. The only food that for sure you can never have again if you have elevated antibodies to it, there's one food, and that food is wheat. You can't be a little pregnant. You can't have a little wheat. You know, you can't because the immune system never forgets with wheat. It's called a memory B cell. And the only food that I've ever found that we know for sure the body makes antibodies to is wheat. So with dairy, for example, with dairy, it's possible that a year after being on a wheat-free, dairy-free diet, a year after that, you may be able to bring dairy back into your diet again. It's possible. It's not always the case, but it's possible. With strawberries, if you find that you're, and I just made up strawberries, it could be any food, but you find that you're allergic to strawberries, it's possible a year later that you'll be able to eat strawberries again. You have to heal the gut. There's we talk about that in the book a lot about how to heal the gut. But once you've healed the gut of the damage that's been accumulating there, it's possible. But the only food that absolutely never again you can't cheat is wheat. Because with one exposure to wheat, and people may not feel bad when they eat it, and they think, I feel fine if I have it once in a while. I'm okay. No, but you turn on the immune system, and if the weak link in your chain is your thyroid, you start getting elevated antibodies to your thyroid again. Mm. Or if the weak link in your chain is your lungs, you start getting elevated antibodies to your lungs or your brain or wherever it is. And you don't feel it when the immune system is attacking your lungs. You don't feel it when the immune system is attacking your brain. You just don't feel it. But it is the mechanism that gets started wherever the weak link is in your chain when you're exposed to wheat again.
Got it. So just for, the audience help, what is like the most like ridiculous place that you've seen wheat actually in, and how could they avoid it as well?
Lipstick.
What?
That's a great response. What? That's exactly right. It's like, what? And you said
that's
most ridiculous. So I
yeah, that you hit it on the head. Oh my god.
Yeah, lipstick, shampoos. You know, and with shampoos, it's not that it gets absorbed, but you smell it, and it's called baker's asthma. There's a common mechanism. When you smell wheat, if you have a sensitivity to it, it activates your immune system. Very common. But wheat is in Play-Doh. So kids that are playing with Play-Doh, they get it on their hands, and they can cause a problem. They smell it. Wheat is in gravies. It's in soups. The most ridiculous one from a food perspective, when you go to a Japanese restaurant and you order sushi, you think you're safe because it's rice. And rice doesn't have toxic gluten in it. However, you have to ask the waiter, say, please ask the chef if he puts any flour in his rice. And they say, oh, no, they don't do that. I understand, please ask the chef. And the waiter looks at you like you're a little bit of a nutcase. But then in three of the last seven restaurants that I've gone into, they came back and said, I'm sorry, sir, yes, chef puts a scoop of flour in the sushi rice because it makes it stickier. So people are ordering rice thinking they're safe. And the same was true at J. Alexander's, a chain restaurant in the Midwest. When I took my sister there, they put a scoop of flour in all of their rice because it makes it a little stickier. Wow. And you'd never know that. So you think you're safe ordering a rice dish, and you're not.
Wow. Yeah. See, that's a problem. Yeah, because I did hear about the sushi, and because it's interesting because, you know, just because I'm trying to do this as diligently as possible, and I saw that rice is fine, and that's obviously not the case. It's another question that you have to ask.
Yeah, it is. It's unfortunate that it's just so dominant in our world today. Wheat is everywhere. You know, just walk into a coffee shop and everything you see there to eat is made from wheat. Everything. And we've become a society totally dependent on that. And it's a big problem, folks. You know, there's no question wheat has saved millions and millions of lives, of course. You know, if there's a famine in Africa and we send a boatload of wheat over there, you save thousands and thousands of lives. But you tear up their guts in the process. And then 10, 15 years later, they now are developing these autoimmune diseases. That's what's happening to us, and it's happening at earlier and earlier ages.
Yeah, no, this is unbelievable. Well, this show has been fantastic, but I always have to ask, like, a selfish question for, you know, purely my knowledge point. You talk about big foreheads, and I know we've never met, but my forehead's been humongous since birth. But you did say that studies show that 86% of celiac adults have an enlarged forehead. What is that about?
There is a developmental mechanism, and I don't know why it is. I've never seen a study that explains it. But what the studies do show is that for people that have large foreheads, if you identify that large forehead early in life and you get these kids on a gluten-free diet, their skull development changes so that they don't mature into adults with large foreheads and like their brothers and sisters have. So, and what's the problem with a large forehead? Well, I don't know. I mean, I've got one and I'm doing okay in life. But what would my potential have been if my head hadn't been stretched out that way? Because all the tiny little nerves that come out of the head that go down to the rest of the body, they get affected by the position of the bones of the head, you know? And so if you've got a little bit of an abnormal development, it's not balanced overall, that's the danger of having this enlarged forehead.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, there's no reversing it, huh? That I guess at this point it's just what it is.
Yeah, in an adult there's not. If you're a young child, there is.
Oh, wow. I found that one of the more shocking things in the book. I was like, they have to start looking into that. And I guess it's if you start noticing your child might have that, then you can start attempting to do what you have to do for
her. Right. There are simple tests. There are simple blood tests that you can do. You just have to be comprehensive in your testing. And if you go to my website, there is a article there called The Conundrum of Gluten Sensitivity, Why the Tests Are Often Wrong. And when you read this article, it explains what kind of tests you have to do, plus the studies that validate it. And you take that article to your doctor and say, hey, this is a test I'd like to do. And let your doctor order the test. And the result is you can find out if your child has elevated antibodies to wheat right now. And if they do, it's a problem. And for some kids, it's the trigger for attention deficit. In the Journal of Attention Disorders in 2006, they published a study. They looked at 130 kids with attention deficit, and they said every child or their parents reported significant improvement, and that's the magic word with researchers, because remember, these guys are geeks. They're not English writers. They're geeks. So when they say significant improvement, they're trying to tell us how important this is. And they said every child or their parents report significant improvement in all 12 DSM-4 markers within 6 months, fails to pay attention, interrupts frequently, blurts out answers, can't sit still, disrupts the class. Every marker improves in every child within 6 months. Every marker. Now, if this were a drug, it would be on the front page of every paper in the country. But there's no profit. There's no profit in an eating style So there's no one pushing for this information to get out there.
Yeah, no, that is crazy. I definitely, you know, I want to end with the statement that you had in the book, because I think the book absolutely, you know, highlights like the medical community's short-sightedness, or, you know, just they're not interested in the diet portion. You said, you know, your statement said basically that individuals with celiac disease typically require an average of 5 doctors and 11 years of symptoms before they receive the correct diagnosis of celiac disease. So I definitely just beg the audience to kind of take advantage of the stuff on your website, get tested, do what they have to do, because you could be struggling for, you know, you say an average of 11 years of unnecessary pain.
That's the average. That's the average.
Yeah.
So here's the average patient. Mrs. Patient starts having problems with her joints. You know, and she tries to live with it. You know, she's feeling, you know, okay. But, you know, if the weak link in her chain is her joints, that's the symptoms that start acting up a little bit. Or if the weak link in the chain is the brain, maybe she starts having headaches. Whatever, but let's use the joints. So eventually, you know, she's tried some Advil. It helps a little bit, but it doesn't get the job done. So eventually she goes to her doctor. She's having a hard time walking when she gets up in the morning. She's got to get in the shower, got to get all loosened up, and then she can walk better, but it's bothering her. Her doctor gives her something for it. It doesn't help very much. She goes back 3 months later, 6 months later. He gives her something stronger. It doesn't really help much. She goes back 3-6 months later, sends her to a rheumatologist, a joint expert. The rheumatologist doesn't do much of anything, just gives her a stronger drug. That seems to help a little bit, but it doesn't really fix it. And this goes on and on. You go back to the rheumatologist. He then sends her to a tertiary research center. That's like a hospital where they do research on the tough cases. They can't figure out what's wrong. They do all their tests. Nothing comes back positive for the joints and the tests. Nothing at all. They can't figure out what's wrong. So they tell her it's all in her head. They send her to a psychiatrist. That's number 4.
Mm.
So she's sent to the psychiatrist, and she says, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of depressed. I'm in pain all the time. Well, I'd be depressed if I was in pain all the time. It's normal to be depressed when you're in pain all the time. That's not abnormal. So, you know, she's sent to the psychiatrist. She starts taking these meds, and, you know, maybe she feels a little better, drugged up a bit, but she can't tell. So she decides to get a massage. She goes to get the massage, laying on the table, telling her story to the massage therapist. And the massage therapist says, oh, my mom had the same thing. And she gave up wheat, and all her joint pains were gone in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That's the scenario that happens again and again and again. It happens so frequently, it's embarrassing how frequently it happens. That's the average 5 physicians, 5 different healthcare practitioners, and 11 years to get the right diagnosis. That's correct.
That is terrible. That is so bad.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You're a pleasure to have on this show. I just want to give you the floor to, you know, just tell everybody how to get in touch with you, how to order this amazing book, and any parting words that you'd like to give the audience before we jump off the call.
Oh, thanks so much. Well, there's a couple of things to say, and thanks so much for referencing the book. This is my 30 years in practice. It's called The Autoimmune Fix. It's on Amazon right now, and it's at $16 on Amazon. They've got it really cheap. I don't know why, but they're doing that. But that's fine. My website is thedr.com, thedr.com, and you'll find lots of stuff, lots of information there. And the docuseries that's about to come out, which I think everyone would really enjoy, it's all free. The docuseries is at Betrayal Series, S-E-R-I-E-S, BetrayalSeries.com. You can register there. It's all free. You can watch the whole thing. And the last thing that I would tell you is, and this is the last paragraph in my book, and it's from a good friend of mine, Dr. Jeffrey Bland, who wrote this. He's the founder of Functional Medicine, the Institute for Functional Medicine. And this is what he said. Throughout your life, the most profound influences on your health, vitality, and function are not the doctors that you have visited, or the drugs, or the surgery, or the other therapies you've undertaken. The most profound influences are the cumulative effects of the decisions you make about your diet and lifestyle, on the expression of your genes. And with that, I say thank you very much for listening today, and thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. I'll definitely look forward to hearing more, and I'm signing up for that series, absolutely, and I hope that the audience does as well.
Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great night, Doc. That was Dr. Tom O'Brien. Real, real powerful stuff. Check out his website. It's awesome. There's a lot of great resources, and his book is fantastic. Just like I had mentioned to him, I'm definitely trying to eliminate gluten and dairy from my diet. I've always been pretty decent with the sugar, and I've gotten off that for some time, and just a miracle in weight loss just by getting rid of sugar out of your diet is, you know, I could talk about it for days. But this gluten thing is interesting. After reading the book, I'm definitely a believer in its role in a lot of different things health-wise. And if you are having any problems, even like joints or just not feeling up to snuff even in your mental capacity and cognitive function, give it a try. You know, he said 3 weeks, he's already start seeing some vast improvements. So definitely try. This is Omar Cumberbatch from the Wellness Ultimatum Radio Show. Have a great night.